Hello, hello, everybody. Good evening, good evening. Hope you're doing well. Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain, freedomain.com/donate to help out the show would very, very deeply, humbly, and gratefully be appreciated. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So, big tweet this week. And there's a lot to say about it. A lot of which will be difficult, uncomfortable, and controversial. So get ready for that, because it's happening. And, of course, I'd love to get your thoughts about it shortly. But let's talk about the tweet that has gone well north of 50 million views and counting. And then we'll talk about why it's controversial, and we will talk about, I think, or at least what I think it means, and of course I'd love to hear what you think it means. So the tweet, in a nutshell, is a still from the movie Obsession. It's a sort of horror movie that's come out relatively recently, and it's an offended, upset, and enraged woman. And the tweet is, how your girlfriend looks at you when you suggest or tell her to block the man who, quote, raped her in 2019. Boom! And they're away to the races. And this cuts right to the heart of some seriously thorny sexual politics, and it has absolutely hit the roof and outraged. I mean, of course, not all women, but it has certainly done its outrage work on a fairly significant number of women. And of course, some women are saying, well, you know, I need to reclaim my power. I need to see him again. A few women are even saying, well, I need to have sex with him on my own terms and reclaim my narrative and things like that. But it really is a wild phenomenon to see. Just a reminder, an outraged woman, and the text is something like how your girlfriend reacts when you suggest she actually block the man who, quote, raped her in 2019. And some of the women are, how dare men make fun of rape? Nobody's making fun of that. It's a horrible, evil, ugly, vicious, immoral action. So nobody's making fun of that. But what's really going on here? Why are the women so upset and why are the men so concerned? Now, I've never had any particular experience with a girlfriend who has some sort of open communication or access to a man she claimed, and I'm just going to say assaulted. It's such an ugly word. I don't even like it passing my lips. The grape. So I've never directly known a woman who has had any kind of contact. I mean, I've known very few women who've ever claimed to have been assaulted in this way as adults. But I will tell you about a woman I met when I was 19. So when I was 19, I spent, after high school, 18, 19, I spent about a year and a half working up in Northern Ontario as a gold panner and prospector, claim staker, and so on. And I would work sort of 3 months on, and then I would have a month off. And the reason for that was that I worked 7 days a week, and I would accumulate all of these days off. And then I would have to take them, so then I would come back. Now, the place that I stayed, there was a roommate situation. So I basically just slept on some couch cushions on the floor. I needed a place to stay, and I won't sort of get into the details of the living arrangement. It's not particularly important. Actually, not even remotely important. But I would sort of sleep on these couches, couch cushions on the floor. And there were two other men living in the place. And one of them I'll call Bob, not his real name. And his girlfriend I will call Sarah, not her real name. So Bob and Sarah were kind of an awkward couple to be around. You know, it's always tough when you have roommates and you have to kind of figure out how the girlfriend situation works. Is she over all the time? Is she eating food? Is she got stuff in the bathroom? I mean, it's complicated because, you know, you have a roommate, and if your roommate has a girlfriend and she's over a lot, then it gets kind of complicated and kind of messy, right? So Bob and Sarah was over a lot. And of course, Sarah had a dysfunctional home life, so she was over a lot. And I don't know if you've ever had this situation, but man alive, it's uncomfortable. I've had it once or twice where your roommates are having sex, like some combination of the Beijing opera being tortured and the dying cat parade from Friends. And it's just, the caterwauling and screeching and screaming and crying out to at least 8,000 of the 10,000 gods that people believe in. And it's kind of awkward. And it seems kind of weird and performative and not sensitive to, I don't know, the propriety of the situation, the sensitivities and sensibilities of other people in the living space and so on. And when you have sort of a hypersexual and very loud couple, I mean, you just leave. I remember pacing the streets at, you know, 1 a.m, 2 a.m. in the snow, because it's just like I'd rather be anywhere but there, right? And Sarah, the girlfriend, was a feminist and made no bones about it. And, you know, a lot of people are just like, feminism, evil, evil. I view it all as coming down to political power. I don't really blame the feminists. I don't really blame anyone in particular. If there's a ring of power, people are going to pick it up. If you waterbomb $100 bills in a poor section of town, people are going to scoop up those dollar bills. It doesn't make them thieves. It just means that there's a weird, bad, strange situation going on and people are going to take advantage of it. I don't view feminists as a problem. The only problem is political power. You know, that old statement that most people are trimming the leaves at the tree of evil, very few are striking at the root. The root is political power, and the root of political power is child abuse, as I've sort of talked about for many, many decades now. More than 2 decades publicly, and before that, privately, semi-privately, in universities, and so on. So she was a feminist. And we would have interesting conversations. She was a fast talker. And I'm always a little bit suspicious of fast talkers, especially if they don't ask people questions. So Sarah, one night, this is not anybody in particular, but one of the roommates was a foolish spender, to put it mildly, and he had bought this big, giant marble table that had a big crack running down one side. And nobody wanted to sit on that one side in case the marble table came down and either neutered you or sheared your legs off at the knees. And it was just one of these foolish purchases that, hey, it's on sale. It's like, yes. And the money you save from buying this cracked-ass marble table worth weighing 4,000 pounds, whatever money you save from buying this cracked marble table, you will have to spend on prosthetics to replace your legs when they get sheared off, when it cracks and breaks. So every time you have a dinner party, people would only sit on one side of the table. And this is the kind of thing, like, if it had broken in this apartment building, this was on the 5th floor, I mean, it would have gone at least 2 to 3 floors down. Before stopping, it would be like dropping a giant piece of heated metal through several layers of ice. So we're all sitting on one side. And Sarah is talking about feminism, and I can't honestly remember. It's been a long time now. It's been 40 years. I can't remember how the subject came up, but she talked about how she had been assaulted in this way. And she talked about, you know, it was a guy she knew and she had no idea. And, you know, I mean, there were confounding factors, a little bit of alcohol, really late at night, a kind of sleepover that turned more sinister and so on. And she said that she was assaulted in this kind of way. And as a young whippersnapper, less than half a decade into the study of philosophy, I mean, I had some questions. Because, of course, the men and the women were giving her a lot of sympathy. And listen, I mean, obviously, goes without saying, if she had been assaulted in this kind of way, then she should receive a great degree of sympathy. Now, if you have been subjected to a significant evil in the world, you now have a responsibility. I mean, we all have a responsibility to fight and oppose evil. Those who have experienced it directly have, in a sense, a greater responsibility because we know exactly what it looks like and exactly how harmful it is. So I asked some questions. Because I myself had been subjected to many years of evil attacks. And even then, I felt a responsibility to talk about the nature of evil and its effects on people so that evil could be combated, opposed, fought, whatever you want to say. And I asked the question that had everyone tense up. You know, when you try and lean a little bit against the Overton window, you stray off the reservation, you go off the dotted, beaten train track paths of acceptable discourse, and I asked, did you go to the police? You know, it's a pretty important question, right? Did you go to the police? It's a very important question. Because she was a feminist. I mean, not just because she was a feminist, but in particular being pro-woman, because if this man was one of the few percentage points of men capable of this kind of assault, then because you care about women, and I mean, everybody who's got any sense at all cares about women, cares about men, cares about virtue, then you go to the police. You go to the police. Why? Why do you go to the police? Well, to get the son of a gun locked away. Locked away. And of course, there was a pause, and she looked at me scathingly and said, well, no. I said, so he's out there roaming around doing this more? I mean, I doubt it was just once. And the hostility. Now, I can understand certain circumstances in which, I mean, obviously it's far from fun. I mean, it's a horrible experience to go to the police to lay these charges, to go through a potential trial if it happens and so on. It's ugly. I get that. But if you're not willing to do difficult things to find evildoers, then I don't know what you're doing in the arena at all. Then don't be a feminist. Don't claim to fight evil, particularly evil enacted against women, and then not go and get somebody who assaults women in this kind of way, get his ass thrown in jail where it should be and where it should stay. And she said, you know, the victims are often put on trial. How short was your skirt? Did you contact him again? Were you drunk? Did you say yes to anything? Were there any witnesses? Did you go talk to someone? Did you take photos? Did you go to the hospital? Did you have a kit done? And I said, well, I'm not an expert. Even back then, of course, it's a true thing to say. I'm not an expert. But if there was physical damage, right? Physical damage. If you had a torn this or a bruised that, if you had blood and materials under your fingernails because he assaulted you. And of course, if you have the semen, or it can be collected, then, you know, it's not a, again, I'm no lawyer, I'm no expert, but I said, it doesn't seem to me to be a super complicated case if you have all of that. I mean, there's a lot of evidence there, right? A lot of evidence. And if you have a lot of evidence, usually there is not much of a trial, right? Again, no expert, but that's my understanding. That's my understanding. I mean, 40 years ago, of course, DNA testing was in its infancy, but you would save this material for when it got stronger or better. But of course, if you say, hey, I'm going on a date with so-and-so, or I'm having dinner with so-and-so, and then, you know, there's physical injury and semen and so on, then you have a case. Because if there's physical damage, black eyes, torn this, that we don't have to get into the details, of course. If there's physical damage and people knew you were on a date and, you know, he was back at your place and so on. And again, I think it had been relatively recent. So again, DNA was coming along. You know, you got paternity immigration disputes, 1985, this is 1986, and so on. In 1986, some murders were solved with DNA. It wasn't yet in routine forensic use, but you know it's coming. If you go and talk to the police, they'll say this technology is coming, and even if you can't get them right away, you can store the DNA until such time as you can. Now listen, again, the last thing I want to sound is unsympathetic. So I can understand the reasoning by which a woman might not want to go to the police. I'm not saying I necessarily agree with that. It's hard for me to say as a man, and I've never experienced anything like this. So again, I say this with all due sensitivity, but I can understand the reasoning. I can't understand the hostility at the question. I could understand being tormented and saying, oh, you know, I wrestled with it. I talked to lawyers. I talked to my family. I talked to my friends. And, you know, they all went over it. And I weighed it. And it torments me that he's still out there, but I decided not to because of X, Y, and Z. Okay, I can see the point of view. But when people just get angry, like, how dare you ask me, did you go to the police to protect women from a guy who assaults people in this kind of way? Why would you get angry at that question? Why would you get angry at the question? It's a logical question. You were attacked by a predator. Did you help society deal with the predator? And I remember that flash of anger. And she said, are you saying I'm lying? Are you saying I'm lying? I'm like, well, okay, that's not, I don't know where that's coming from. Oh, so if it didn't go to the police, it didn't happen? Is that what you're saying? And that's, I don't know if you've had this situation where you're having a conversation with someone, you step a little bit off the dotted lines, and they go, TFN, totally freaking nuts. And you're like, okay, I didn't realize I was being thrown off the train at the little stop called Crazy Town. It's volatility. And then, of course, the woman is upset. The woman is angry. And what do all the white knights on the one side that's not broken or cracked of the retarded marble table? Oh, what are you doing? Don't upset her. Don't get, and of course she knows that's going to happen and so on, right? But, you know, if there is a dog in the neighborhood that keeps biting the children, isn't it kind of important to ask if the dog has been captured and dispatched or taken care of or relocated or whatever they do with dogs that are biting children all the time, put down, whatever, right? Now, of course, I don't know whether it happened or not. And she said, I'm a feminist because I was attacked in this kind of way. And I said, I sympathize, but isn't he? I mean, he's still out there. He's still attacking women, we assume, right? Wasn't a one-time thing. He's still attacking women. And that's I said, you know, with great sympathy. It's funny, you know, I'm a firm but sympathetic person. I think it's a pretty good combo to be firm but sympathetic. And I said, it's got to be tough for you that he's still out there preying on women. And that is tough. I mean, I don't know how many victims these kinds of predators have over the course of their life, but I'm pretty sure it's not often just one. I'm pretty sure it's not one. These kinds of accusations, obviously, are not always true. This is why we have a process of innocence and guilt, of proof beyond a reasonable doubt, proof 95% plus, why you get to cross-examine your accusers, why you get to examine the evidence, you get to rebut, you get your experts in, trial by jury, because it's tough, man. Accusations of sexual misconduct, particularly if there's no physical damage to the person, to the victim, are very tough. It is a he said, she said situation. And we also know that particularly on the left, accusations of vile sexual misconduct fly pretty frickin' fast and furious. Just ask Kavanaugh or Trump, for that matter. And again, because of the multi-trillion dollar lucrative power of political authority, people will do and say just about anything to get their hands on that power. And power addicts will do or say just about anything to get their hands on the bloody crack of political power. So we know, these things are weaponized. We also know, and again, this is completely detached from reality, I get all of that. But we also know that women's fantasies, what they report as their fantasies, have, well, you can look it up yourself, let's just say there's a significant amount of pretty macabre directions the women's fantasies go in. We also know that the believe all women hashtag or approach is designed to more easily weaponize women's accusations against the enemies of those who thirst after political power. Men and women alone in a room with no physical evidence of this kind of evil, egregious assault. It's he said, she said, and it cannot rise past the burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. It can't. It just can't. It's like the women who say, oh, I ended up in some guy's bed and I was roofied. Okay, maybe. Maybe. It seems kind of rare. And there was a study not too long ago that examined a bunch of women's claims who had been roofied and had had blood tests, and there was no date rape drugs in their system at all. You know, maybe it's a combination of being 110 pounds, taking a handful of SSRIs and drinking alcohol. I don't know. So if a woman and a man end up in bed together and the woman claims that something bad happened and he says it's not bad and there's no physical injury, what can you do? What can you do? They say, well, women would never lie. It's like, oh, of course they would. Of course they would. I'm not saying women lie more than men, although there is makeup, but it's at least the same. And if lying is a manipulation of the less physically strong, then women may have a tendency to lie more. women, of course, caught with another man or caught having an affair or having sex or being with another man can sometimes claim this kind of egregious behavior as a way of saving their marriage, their relationship with their children, their relationship with a boyfriend, and so on. I've seen, I really don't want to get into big particular details, doesn't really matter, but I have seen public figures as a whole, I have seen and know for a fact that they're lying, and they go out on the internet, look straight at the camera, and lie. If you've ever been around somebody who's a really good liar, it's kind of like the Clinton Olympics. You know, the Clintons were past masters of infinite falsehoods. And if you've ever been around somebody who's a really convincing and committed liar, somebody who just uses words to get what they want, the way that you use a letter opener to open the mail, it's a sight to be seen. And most people are amoral at best. We know this from the Milgram experiments, where people can be ordered to deliver fatal or near-fatal shocks to people. Well, not even ordered to. The experiment requires that you continue, and they just continue. Amoral. And we saw this under COVID, of course. Most people are amoral. And what that means is that most people have no foundational issue at all with lying. Men and women. Men and women. But most people have no moral issue whatsoever with lying. The entire purpose of society up until about 8 minutes ago was to make sure that men and women were never going to be in a situation where people would have to try and figure out he said, she said, but no confounding evidence, no physical evidence, no torn this, bruised that, black eyes, whatever, right? The whole point was to prevent this. This is why there were chaperones. This is why a woman had to keep her door open and at least one foot on the floor. This is why there were shotgun weddings. The whole point of society was to prevent situations of he said, she said, because they can't be adjudicated and lives literally are destroyed. This, of course, happens with these campus proceedings, which are in many jurisdictions and places absolutely hideous. Absolutely hideous. I mean, if I had a son who was going to university, well, first of all, I'd tell him, unless he had some piece of paper he absolutely needed to get in order to pursue his profession, you know, doctor, lawyer, engineer, whatever, accountant, unless he desperately needed that piece of paper, I would say to him, don't go. I mean, for a variety of reasons, the programming that goes on there, particularly, of course, in the arts, and the possibility of a false allegation is not zero. And those things can destroy your life. I mean, arguably, it's at least as bad to go to jail over a false accusation as it is to be assaulted in this evil way to begin with. At least the woman or man who's assaulted in this terrible way gets massive amounts of sympathy. They don't face jail. They don't have legal bills in that way. Whereas the person who's accused, their life is destroyed, massive legal bills. If they go to jail, they're probably going to get assaulted in that way anyway, more than once. So we got to be careful about false accusations. Now, the idea, of course, is that you try to design a society where these he said, she said situations are least likely to arise. And that means curbing the lusts of the young. Because, you know, young people want to have a lot of sex. I got no problem with that. But one of the reasons that young people's lusts were able to be developed to such a significant degree is that the lusts were restrained by the actions of the elders. Now, of course, with the welfare state and so on, the negative consequences of sexual activity have largely been eliminated. You know, in the past, if a woman got pregnant outside of wedlock, the dad often would force the guy to marry her, because otherwise she would be unmarriable and the parents would have to raise the grandchildren, which is why sometimes they would pass the grandchild off as a whoopsie late in the game surprise baby to preserve the reputation of the daughter. Now the welfare state, children are no longer liabilities, they're assets, which has changed the whole equation and weakened the entire community and familial ties around enforcing any kind of sexually proprietary, any kind of sexual propriety, any kind of sexual standards. I mean, I had this, there's a debate, premium.freedomain.com, there's a pretty ferocious debate I had about abortion and this sort of stuff with a feminist. And I did, of course, point out that the majority of women who are attacked in this evil kind of way know the attackers, which is a wild thing when you think about it. Because, you know, everyone thinks this, some woman gets jumped in the middle of nowhere by some guy she doesn't know. That's relatively uncommon compared to it's some guy she knows. Now, of course, this is not to blame the victims, because this is the question that comes up. And it's an important question. It's an important question. But we tell people to be careful. If you're a man and you grew up as a boy, sorry, that's a little redundant. So you grew up as a boy, and as a boy, you learn not to trash talk people you don't know. You know, yo mama jokes or whatever, right? You don't trash talk people you don't know, boys you don't know, because you don't know if they can take a joke. You don't know if they're a little nuts. You don't know if they're a little psycho. And they're going to beat the crap out of you because you just said something. You know, when your mama sits around the house, she really sits around. She's so fat. When she sits around the house, she sits around the house. You know what I mean? You don't, I mean, you can trash talk friends you know. You can make little jokes. When I used to play soccer with my friend named Chuck, and I wanted him to pass upfield to me, I'd say, up, Chuck! Boy, good to have rescued that. Tremulous joke from the mists of deep time. But as a man, as a boy, you don't trash talk people you don't know. You don't get involved in verbal altercations. You don't call people names. You don't insult their mothers, their girlfriends, their families, their sisters. You don't. Why? Because they could be nuts. It's dangerous. Ah, you got free speech. True. You have free speech. You should be able to go into a giant biker bar, go up to the biggest guy, inevitably named Tiny, poke him in the chest, and make some horrible joke about his mother. Yeah, it's free speech. But don't. Because you're probably going to get a knuckle sandwich straight to the choppers. Even though you're in the right. Yes, the giant man named Tiny should not, absolutely not, be beating the brown out of you for making a joke about his mama. Yes, and maybe he'll go to jail, and maybe it is assault, and blah, 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 blah. But every man, come on. We know that if we get the ever-loving sinus bag of snot beaten out of us because we went up to the biggest guy in the bar, poked our finger in his chest, or not even that. Maybe that's considered assault. I don't know. We just went up and said something mean about his mama, and then we got our faces rearranged like a Picasso painting, and we said, this is what happened. Our friends would say, well, that was stupid, wasn't it? Why the F did you do that? Why would you do that? What, are you crazy? They wouldn't sit there and say, well, you know, you're totally in the right. Morally, he's in the wrong. That's terrible. And you should keep doing that. No. No, 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 no. No, that's not how it rolls in the male world, right? We know. We live under the threat of violence over words. So you learn to moderate. I mean, this used to be Duels used to be fought over words. So you learn to moderate. You don't rely on abstract principles. You learn to moderate because there are dangerous people in the world, like 6% of people are sociopaths or psychopaths, and you don't always know. So you walk around the world from time to time biting your tongue because you don't know. You don't know. So you act with caution until you get to know people really well, and then you can make your mama jokes, maybe, right? Maybe you can trash talk them a little. Maybe. But you've got to establish that first. You can't just assume that to be the case. And one of the problems with promiscuity culture is women end up, and men, of course, too. We're just focusing on the women now, although male assault in this kind of way is also terrible and fairly horribly common. Is that women end up in highly vulnerable physical positions with men they don't really know. And yeah, most guys are decent. Not overly good, but not really bad. Decent, decent-ish, you know, middle of the bell curve. In the same way that most people, if you walk up to them and make a yo mama joke or whatever, they'll be like, okay, that's a little, that's a bit much, as they would say in England. You know, that's a little, that was uncalled for. Or they'll make a yo mama joke back or something like that. But they're not going to see red go glassy-eyed and beat you until your bones show. But you don't know who, so you don't do it. You don't know who. This is an old argument from feminists or maybe it was the anti-feminists, I can't remember. But the argument goes something like this, that if you take your wallet full of cash and you leave it on a park bench in Central Park for the weekend and you come back on Monday, it's going to be gone. It's got to be gone. Now, did the person who steal your wallet do wrong? Yes, they did. Were you wise to leave your wallet on a park bench in Central Park for the weekend? It's not like it's Tokyo. Tokyo would probably still be there. Tokyo probably would have money added to it. Tokyo would probably be mailed to you or walked over. But not Central Park. And if a friend came to me and said, I left my wallet on a park bench in Central Park over the weekend, and I came back Monday and it was gone, and I'm outraged, I'd be like, yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, I guess the guy... Whoever took it was wrong, but come on. I mean, that was dumb. That was dumb. And of course, good men are trying to tell women about evil men because we know them. We grew up with them. I wrote a whole scene in my novel called The Future, which you should definitely read, freedomain.com/books. It's free. The audiobook is fantastic in particular. I am a trained hacker, so I kind of know what I'm doing around dialogue and storytelling. But yeah, I had a bit of a psycho friend when I was younger. I think it was only one, but he made up for the lack of the others by having extra special Tabasco spicy spinal column psycho stuff. So the world is full of dangerous people, and if you're a hedonist, and if you just want to go and have your fun and get pinned under random guys, it's Russian roulette, ladies. It's Russian roulette. And if women had infallible instincts, then they would never get assaulted in this horrible way by men they knew. And I don't know, man, if you're a guy, and listen, I'm sure this happens to girls and women too, but if you're a guy, every man has gone through the process of trying to tell a woman he cares about that she's dating a bad guy. And she will say, he did this, he did that. He called me these names, he yelled in my face. He punched the wall, he threw something. He stomped up to me, I was frightened. He yells. And every man... I mean, ladies, talk to men, honestly. This is why it's important to have this conversation. So you talk to men, and every man has had the experience of trying to say to a woman he cares about, doesn't mean that he wants to date her, could be somebody much younger, could be a friend's sister, could be his own sister, cousin. Every man has had the experience where a woman is clearly dating a dangerous guy, and he says, you should stop dating him. He's dangerous. It's going to go badly. And what do you get? And tell me your stories. If you want to call in, tell me your stories. What do you get? What do you get? Oh, he's promised to change. He's quit drinking. You know, he was under a lot of stress. He hadn't been to the gym for a while. He was hangry. He didn't mean it. He cried. He's sorry. He's hot. He's tall. He's a finance bro. And look, I mean, it's not like it doesn't happen with guys. She's clearly unstable.
Yeah, but she's pretty, so I'm going to date her.
All right. Good luck.
It's like watching Dr. Strangelove go down with the bomb. Watching these people date these crazy people. And this is a deep, dark aspect. It's opened up by this tweet of female sexuality, which is there are a lot of women who like the bad boys. I'm simply putting this out as an observation. There are a lot of guys who push their penises in the top right of the hot crazy corner and get banged into oblivion like a grenade went off in their pants. It's kind of annoying. You know, I think we've all slid down that luge tube once or twice in our lives. But trying to talk people out of these terrible decisions is often a kind of fool's quest. So girls like the bad boys, and there's reasons for that. They're evolutionary in nature in that it was not like all the reproductive choices that women faced in the past were entirely as voluntary as they should be, or perhaps not even particularly voluntary at all, in the same way that men's finances were scooped up by wives and children, and they were drafted in wars, and they were disposable as a whole. I mean, history was brutal to everyone. And given that there was fairly regular conquering of peoples by other peoples, the women who could pivot to an appreciation of an aggressive bad boy, well, sad to say, fact of life, those genes survived. The women who were unable to pivot to the new bad boys who just took over, well, those genes, no survive, senor. They go the way of the dodo. The don't goes the way of the dodo. And we can have sympathy, of course, for all the amoralities and immoralities of history, but that's a fact. So when this goes viral, and this is crazy viral, like this is why I want to talk about it tonight. It's crazy viral. Are women asking men, asking us, about our experiences? Wow, this has really gone viral. What have you seen? What have you heard? What do you know? What have you experienced? Why is this going viral? Is it too much to ask these days? Or ever? Maybe it's too much to ask. For women to say to men, what? I mean, can you imagine this? I got goosebumps on the back of my hand even just thinking about this. Can you imagine women saying to men these days, wow, this has really struck a chord with you. What do you have to teach us? Tell me, oh men, who have slightly different brains, for better or for worse, what do you have to teach us? Why is this going viral? And men, I think, would say that we have kind of a confusion about some aspects of some women's sexuality, which is, why do you keep the bad guy around but block me every time I mildly annoy you? It's a little confusing, isn't it? It's a little confusing. Again, not all women, obviously, and not all women who've been assaulted in these horrible ways, very few, I would assume, but enough that it's going viral. And of course, we won't get into this in great detail. I've talked about it before. We also have the enormous challenge of 50 Shades of Grey, that this novel, highly pornographic novel, where a woman is happy to clash, boom, bang, a victim of severe childhood sexual abuse and have him assault and beat her because he's rich, has abs, a helicopter, and plays piano. That's, I got to tell you, this is a Twilight fan fiction that spawned 1,000 Eat Me, Beat Me, Licorice Whip Rooms has landed like an absolute Nagasaki device on male comprehension of female sexuality. And if you've ever known women who are into this prose, lavish stuff, where he's got to be a werewolf or a vampire or a minotaur or an orc or something big, meaty, manly, muscular, mustachioed, and menacing. It's a little confusing, right? It's a little baffling. It's a little, what the living hell? Shoe and Head has a good video on Morning Glory Milking Farm. I think that's what it's called, about a woman who gets a job extracting the life essence of minotaurs to pay off her student loans and falls in love with a minotaur. He werewolfed across the room vampirely, holding his giant man meat in one hand and $1 billion in the other. Bzz, bzz, wee! Oh my God. I mean, many, many years ago, I applied for a job at Harlequin Romances, the semi-smut publishing company, and I read a bunch of these books to prepare for the interview, because Lord knows I always like to come prepared. And it's a little horrifying, I gotta tell you. It's a little horrifying. And it's confusing. It's confusing. I mean, it's right there. You can read what women like to read. You can read about it. You can sort this on Amazon. It's like, it's not hidden, ladies. We can see it right there. And it's confusing AF. Stated preferences, revealed preferences. Stated preferences, revealed preferences. You understand, ladies? For a lot of men, you know, it's a little confusing. Men say, I like hot women. Who do they pursue? Hot women. Women say, I like sensitive men. Who do they pursue? Assholes. A lot. Not all. Obviously, not all. I get it. I knew a woman many years ago who threw all of her standards aside because the guy was 6'5". And, you know, ladies, if you say, listen, I like him tall and empty-headed, fine. Okay, that's then stated preferences and revealed preferences. It's all of this camouflage that I think is causing this tweet to go viral. It's all of this counter-signaling, this I want a man who's sensitive and who's together and is in touch with his emotions and is thoughtful and caring and brings me flowers. And it's like, okay, those are the stated preferences. Who do you respond to? Who do you respond to? So you understand? Kind of confusing for a lot of men. I mean, I think I understand it fairly well. And again, not all women, blah, blah, blah. All right, let's get to your questions and comments.
Hello, Stefan.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. It's odd talking to you because I've been a listener for such a long period of time. I actually started listening to you when I was 14. So it's been over 10 years now. Anyways, what I originally wanted to call in to ask you another question, but on the topic of what you are discussing in like female sexuality and preferred preferences and whatnot, it was actually something that you brought up several years ago that I really learned a lot from, is how oftentimes men are a direct reflection of females' deeper desires in a society. And the way that's really been something that has come up a lot for me in the last few years is recognizing the ways in which a lot of people are pushing back against figures like Andrew Tate and whatnot. But Andrew Tate is a product of female choices. And then that you see the feminist element in our society having such an abrasive reaction to him. And he was raised by a single mom. He is like followed by a lot of men that don't have other figures in their life. And it's just curious how that plays into an area like that.
Yeah, it's a good question. If you could just mute, because A, you're panting, and B, there's dishes being done in the background. I'd appreciate that. So one of the things that happens in a society that allows women to choose their mates, and in general, I mean, that's the way it's worked for quite some time, at least in the West. There's not really been arranged marriages for a long time, except among the aristocracy who are playing hide the effective gene pool by shuffling cousins back and forth across the continent. But
women get to choose. So a woman who's, you know, reasonably attractive or whatever is going to have, you know, 5 to 10 suitors, and she gets to choose. And that's good. That's right. That's how it should be. Now, when women choose their mates, they are choosing the men who survive. They are choosing the men who reproduce, like genetically who survive. And so in a society where women choose, then male nature, masculinity, is the shadow cast by their choices. So if women choose selfish, unsympathetic, self-absorbed, aggressive jerks, then since there's some genetic element to just about every aspect of personality, and even if we say that there's not, then the guy who's around to raise the kids is going to imprint his personality upon them. And if he's not around, that's a whole different matter, but that also has a huge effect on a boy's personality to grow up fatherless. So women define masculinity when women are allowed to choose their mates. Of course, in some countries, women aren't allowed to choose their mates, in which case the men choose the masculinity and so on. But women want the freedom to choose their mates, which of course is perfectly moral and right and good. But then women don't get to complain that much about masculinity, because masculinity is defined by their choices. Men have to adapt to women's choices. Men have to do what women want in order to achieve reproductive success. So women get to pick and choose, which means masculinity is defined by what and who women pick and choose. And the idea that women can now pick and choose and have for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, which is quite a long time in terms of genetics. I mean, it only took a couple of hundred years to wipe out most psychopathy, sociopathy, and direct evil in, say, England or other places which did this 1% to 2% culling of the most violent, either through a prison or through executions or through shipping overseas, taking them out of the gene pool. It only took a couple of hundred years to mostly eliminate this level of evil and predation and so on. So a couple of hundred years, and it's been, I don't know, when would you say? I mean, hard to say, right? I mean, I guess we could look it up or look back, but it's been hundreds and hundreds of years that women have largely had choices when it comes to who to date and mate. And so who women choose is what masculinity becomes. So for women to say, well, we've had centuries and centuries to shape masculinity, we don't like masculinity, again, it's just one of these, it's like a guy who punches holes in the walls and then says, I can't believe there are holes in the walls. It's like, that's kind of the result of your actions. The Andrew Tate phenomenon, of course, is quite interesting. And he's been investigated up the yin-yang, and they have not, you know, obviously been able to keep him in jail. And so I assume that the accusations that his sex cam business was kidnapping or coercive or something like that. There's no evidence of that. Otherwise, I'm sure that, you know, the authorities want to get him, and they haven't. So I assume that there's no evidence for that. And it's like the OnlyFans question, right? Which is, of course, the men who pay for OnlyFans are driving the market, and that's bad, but there are women who are willing to do it. So the root of Andrew's, the root of Andrew and Tristan Tate's webcam business was, I assume, women who wanted to be in the webcam business. And again, I don't know the details. I just know that he's been investigated up the yin-yang, and he's not in prison. I know that there are other charges going on in the UK. I don't really know much about those. But the OnlyFans and sex cam business, to a large degree, it's not, you know, women kidnapped and forced. And so, I mean, the OnlyFans, it's usually a choice from the woman's own home and so on, right? So even the Andrew Tate phenomenon has something to do with female choices. And male choices, of course, I get that, but it's very easy for women to make the world and then complain about the world that they made. You know, like women spend a lot of time saying to men, oh, it's so creepy when men approach us. I'm just out here trying to have fun with my friends. I just want to have a coffee. Just leave me alone, right? And then the next minute say, it's so weird that men don't approach. Like, there is a little bit of lack of continuity sometimes. And again, not all women and so on. But men see a kind of conformity among women, and then they assume that that conformity among women represents the same thing as conformity among men, and it doesn't. Men disagree with each other all the time. For a woman to disagree with another woman is to threaten the relationship. Men could disagree. We can even have fist fights and still be friends. Maybe not right away, but over time, right? Men tend to forgive, forget, and move on because men have to hunt in hunt game. They have to, you know, put up a barn. They have to build fences. They've got to wage war. So they can't afford to be permanently estranged from potential allies. So you have your fights, you shake, you move on. And so men have a non-conformist culture that you disagree, that you fight, that you oppose. I mean, one of the reasons I'm pretty decent at debating is half my childhood was arguing with my male friends. Death penalty, abortion, free market, socialism, communism, politics, colonialism. And we argued ferociously, and sometimes we'd be kind of pissed off at each other. And then a day or two or three later, it'd be okay. This happens, I would meet twice a week to play baseball and soccer with friends, and we'd try and beat each other, and we'd fight hard, and then we'd go get a pop together and talk about the game. So for men, the only reason that all men would agree on something is that they all agree on it. Because men think that women have as much access to conflict and continuity that men do, and they don't. I mean, talk to women about, you know, their experiences as teenagers, cliques and in-groups and out-groups, and who's popular and who's not, and who's ostracized, and, you know, who's working against them. I mean, it's a crazy maze. I remember talking about this when I was writing my novel, The God of Atheists. I needed to understand younger girls, and, you know, I only have a brother, and of course, I wasn't married back then. So a bunch of friends of mine, I talked to them and said, hey, you've got a daughter. Can I sit down with you in the room and I can take a bunch of notes so I can try and understand how this kind of world works? And oh my God, the stories that came pouring out were hell on earth. And then she did this, and then this person did this, and then I was out here and I tried to get into this group, but they only accepted me. But then this person came over and told them about this. Like, it gives me a headache. Like, the stuff that women have to navigate and negotiate in friendships is crazy, and the conformity requirements are enormous. And so when women are saying, we don't want men to approach us, and other women are not opposing those women, then men think, oh, all women don't want us to approach. Because if there were women who did want men to approach, they'd say, hey, speak for yourself, sister, I want men to approach. But they can't do that. For a variety of evolutionary reasons, scoring very high in trait agreeableness, and it's really, really tough. Really tough to disagree in female friendships. I mean, you hear all these stories. This is one of the reasons why political conformity among women tends to be very high. This is why women have gone crazy lefty, because there's women driving it, or girls driving it, and then anyone who disagrees is an evil cult, Nazi, MAGA, blah, 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 and they're out. Men can strenuously, strongly, energetically disagree and go grab a beer together and forget about it. It's play fighting. It's not real fighting. I mean, an example of this would be the Christmas Truce of 1914, where men on opposite sides of trenches, or no man's land, sorry, in trenches on opposite sides of no man's land in 1914, there was a ceasefire. And what did the men do? They literally trying to murder each other on a daily basis. Well, they go out, they share stories, sing Christmas songs together, Christmas carols, trade cigarettes, trade drinks, play soccer, and then the next day they go back to killing. Like, it's women can't even disagree sometimes without trying to slaughter each other socially, and men can literally be shooting at each other one day and then sharing smokes and drinks the next. Male friendships are kind of like, oh, I can't stay mad at you. And female friendships are, oh, I can stay mad at you. And if you've ever known, I have a friend of mine's sister was going through this when I was a teenager, that some girl in high school had just taken a dislike to her and just relentlessly gunned to get her ostracized from social groups. So when men see women saying, we don't want you to approach us, and they don't see other women fighting with them, they assume that all women believe it. And that's, you know, everyone, all the women believe it, but only these most prominent women are saying it. But they all believe it because they're not fighting, they're not disagreeing, they're not at war with each other over this print, but they can't. Women have to bite back disagreement all the time in female social circles. But men think it's uniformity of belief among women. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that in my dating relationships, I made the intention not to sleep with somebody before I was married to them for a variety of reasons. But one of them was to avoid any issues as far as, you know, like confusion about, you know, accusations, all of that. But I will say with one of my ex-girlfriends, when I broke up with her, she was going through a lot of her own personal issues, and I actually entertained it way too long and for a lot of reasons. And I've had to go through a lot of growth with that. But the long and short of it is we broke up several times before we called it quits. And when I did, she went around and told a lot of people that were in our shared friend group that I broke up with her over text, which just wasn't true. And the interesting thing is I had probably a half dozen of the guys that were in our friend group come up to me and ask what happened there, you know, ask the story. And I didn't have any of the women that were in that friend group come up to me and ask, hey, so she's saying you broke up with her over the phone. What is that? What is the other side of the story here? What actually happened? And I think that was so she could preserve her dignity a little bit in the whole thing. But it was very interesting to see that. Like, I understand that like a girl isn't going to come up to me right after I broke up with somebody necessarily, but the fact that it was so extreme, the gender gap on that, was very curious to me.
And do you know why the women didn't ask you for your side of the story?
Why is that?
Well, because let's say there's a woman named Barb who is a friend of yours and a friend of your ex-girlfriend, and your ex-girlfriend says, oh, he broke up with me over text. And then Barb comes and says, you know, that doesn't seem really like you. Like, what happened? And if you say, no, I did it in person. You know, I can tell you we went here, we did this, we talked for 2 hours and blah, blah, blah. Now, what is Barb going to do with that information? What can she do with that information? Is she going to go back to your ex and say, hang on a second, you're lying. Like, you shouldn't do that. That's wrong. Like, what happens if Barb goes to your ex-girlfriend and says that, look, you're spreading these false rumors. Like, he's got proof. Like, let's say you show her a receipt or something like that. Like, or maybe she goes and checks and says, like, he said you were at this restaurant. He's got this receipt. And, you know, this is the stuff you like to order. I mean, he said that's when the breakup happened. Like, what happened? What does your ex-girlfriend say to Barb if Barb questions her story?
Yeah. Well,
I'm not answering the question. What happens?
Well, they stop having a relationship, probably. Or that the lie is called out, I guess. You know.
Oh, no, it's much worse than that. You're looking at it from the male perspective. It's much worse than that.
I don't know.
Now, Barb goes back to your ex and says, and let's say that she figures it out and she's got some reasonable proof. She goes back to your ex and says, you've lied about this guy. That's not right. Now, she already knows that your ex is willing to completely destroy people's reputations, or try to, in order to appear right.
Totally.
So if she confronts your ex with the fact that your ex has lied, your ex will now try to destroy Barb's reputation and get her kicked out of the friend group, and she will succeed. Because women in general, and this happens with men too, but we're just talking about women in general, in a particular social group, will tend to conform to the most aggressive person who's willing to attack the most. So if Barb goes to your ex and says, you got to come clean on this. Like, this is really bad. Like, you should not be saying about this guy, this falsehood. Then your ex is now going to destroy Barb and get her kicked out of the friend group, and she will succeed. Like, I'm sorry, that the women aren't conformists for nothing. It's serious stuff. So this is why the women don't come to ask you what your side of the story is, because if they go back to Barb and say, well, that wasn't true, or even if they come back and say, I checked with this guy, and that's not what he says, and so And then what your ex is going to say, oh, you don't believe me, you don't trust me, you're going to go with this guy? You think I'm a liar? Right?
Why do you think so the same?
What is the possible benefit? Sorry, go ahead.
What do you think the differential burden on men versus women in that situation is, though? To say, like, let's say some of the men that asked me were good friends with my ex. What's the difference between, you know, the men just having the information, holding on to it, you know, not sharing it? Why wouldn't a woman do that in the same way?
Well, okay, what did your friends do with the fact that you did not break up over text? What did they do with that information?
I don't know. I think it was for their primarily just for their own edification and like clarification of what happened in the situation. And, you know, I think, you know, we're still good friends and we hang out and, you know, meet, but I guess, you know, I don't know. I think they probably just wanted to have a clarity on what happened in the situation, but it didn't really change much beyond like, hey, is this consistent with the character of person that I would like in my friend group? I don't know. I think that that's why they asked. And I honestly took it as a sign of those were truly the friends that cared about me because they were the ones willing to put themselves in an uncomfortable situation. You know, it's uncomfortable to ask, hey, did you do this thing that's slightly shady? You know,
not if you don't do anything about it. I mean, were your male friends in any relationships with the women that your ex had told you broke up over text?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So did they go and tell their girlfriends, hey, I talked to this guy and he didn't break up over text and I believe him and he showed me the receipt or whatever it was, right? Did they go to their girlfriends and say, no, this wasn't what happened?
I know for at least one of them that they did. But for most of them, I don't think they did.
Okay, and the one who did, what happened?
I guess I wasn't curious enough to follow up on that. In that regard,
interesting. So, what do you think? Sorry to interrupt. What do you think should have happened?
Well, I would have liked to be able to just sit down and meet with her, and you know, clear the air, and just say like, "Hey, I'm hearing these things from third parties," and you know. That didn't happen. So, you know, let's talk about it. And I actually offered to do that, but I wanted to meet with, you know, her family there too, because I didn't want to just have one-on-one. It was kind of to the point where I just did not trust her in like a one-on-one setting because she would just, you know, twist everything that we had talked about in the conversation and flip it on me. And it was very toxic, but
okay, sorry to interrupt. Have you ever, and this is not a test, I'm just curious, have you ever gone through the process of trying to root out and expose a liar in a social group?
I've done that on like, you know, one-on-one male friendships. I do that a lot. If they say something about, you know, their dating history or they say something about, you know, some accomplishment that they've had and it just doesn't ring true to me, I'll ask them one-on-one, but I guess in a group setting, probably not.
Well, I don't necessarily mean in a group setting. Sorry, I was unclear. What I mean is that let's say there's somebody who's just kind of a liar, like they lie a lot. Have you ever tried to remove from a social group somebody who's a liar?
Through like exposing them to through the whole like to confronting the lies that they're expressing and
well,
then
it doesn't matter how. Sorry, it doesn't fundamentally matter how, but have you tried and I know this sounds like some big challenge, like you should have. I'm just curious if you've gone through the process of trying to extract or remove or get the social group to ostracize somebody who's amoral or immoral. And it could be some guy who lies about his dating history. It could be some woman who lies about her achievements or like, I don't know, somebody who lies and you can't really get them to stop lying. They're just a habitual liar, a pathological liar. Have you ever gone, and it could be something other than lying, but have you ever tried to get a group to recognize a highly dysfunctional person and remove them from the group and ostracize them from the group? Have you ever tried to get a group to do that?
No, I haven't.
Okay, and what? Roughly, how old are you? Oh, you said 24, right? You're 14 and 10, right?
I'm 26, actually.
26, okay. All right. So you're 26, so you've been an adult for 8 years, and you know, you might have done that even earlier, from sort of 14 or 15 onwards. Have you ever, so, and you've never gone through the process, and this is not a criticism, I think I understand why, but I just sort of want to point it out. You've not gone through the process of trying to remove a toxic person from a social group. Why do you think you haven't? You care about these things, obviously.
Well, if I was to be an armchair psychologist on this one, like, I would honestly say that it's probably just because I grew up homeschooled, and I also grew up in a very tight-knit community. So, you know, my two best friends from childhood are still my two best friends, and I had a large family. So nearly all of my friends outside of those two friends are family members. So I don't know. That could be a reason, but I'm not very certain. But I know that I haven't.
You're giving me a little bit of an excuse here, if you don't mind me saying so, because you were talking about your ex and a bunch of friends and the friends who were dating women that your ex influenced. So that's a social group, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, so, and that's totally like that. Yeah, that's totally separate from that other group. And I guess in that regard, I guess the reason I didn't try to expose her, like, you know, and pursue that is it. I guess it felt like gossiping about a conversation that we had had in private. And
it's not gossiping. It's rules enforcement, which is that someone should not lie about you. And it's immoral and wrong and destructive to lie about someone in this kind of way. It's not gossiping, mm-hmm. right? Self-defense. And yeah. It's not a criticism, but why do you think you didn't really say to people, listen, she's lying, and that's unacceptable. You should not have liars or someone who's lying in the social group, and we need to sit down and talk about it. And I don't want this person in the social group because she's lying about me, and it's really negative and immoral, right? And you haven't done that. And again, that's not a criticism in any way, shape, or form, but there's a reason why people don't do that.
What is that?
Because they'll lose. And you knew that you would lose with your friend group. You knew that if you squared off against your ex about this lying thing, you'd be the one kicked out. That if you forced the issue and you confronted the falsehoods and you asked people to make a choice and say, look, she's lying. She's lying. This is wrong. You know, we broke up. That's a shame. But she should not be trying to harm my reputation by saying I did something as cold-blooded and callous as break up with her over text. It's wrong. It's immoral. If you do that and you square off, you know, the Clint Eastwood style, like dusty Western town style, if you square off against someone who's lying about you and you ask people to choose, what's going to happen?
That I would be the one that got kicked out.
Yeah. She would make sure that you're the one who gets kicked out. She would work the women. She would work the men. Because she's really committed to having the social group and being dominant in the social group. And the reason I know that they would choose her is that's why she lied in the first place. Because if she had known about this group, that if she lies to them, you'll confront her and they will kick her out, she wouldn't have lied in the first place. So she understands the group better than you do. Because she knows that if she lies, the group will not kick her out. Nobody's even going to talk about it. She gets away with it scot-free. And you know that about the group too, which is why, and again, this is not a criticism at all. I'm just pointing it out. You know this about the group, which is why you didn't fight it.
I did have, this is what, 4 years ago now, but I did have several nightmares, you know, after having broken up about, you know, friends of mine coming up to me and telling me, you know, things that I personally feared, you know, that they would say to me. Like, you're a terrible person. I don't, you know, all the worst things they could say. And I don't know if that was just, I don't know what that was, but I know that it was definitely difficult to go through at the time.
Well, that's your unconscious telling you that she runs the group. And if you go up against her, you're out, and she's strengthened. And listen, I don't know if you followed me through the whole deplatforming thing, but this is a big example of this, right? There was me telling honest, moral, factual truths to the world, and then there were people who were getting enraged about it, who were obviously unstable or corrupt or immoral, and society had to choose, right?
Mm-hmm.
Between the truth teller, the honorable man, and the manipulative, destructive liars, right? And who did society mm-hmm. choose?
Yeah.
When you go up against the corrupt, they will escalate. I'm not saying 100% of the time, but it's pretty common. It's by far the norm that if you, and maybe you've had this at work or other places, but if there's somebody who's corrupt and you go up against them, in the business world, I manage to win about 50% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But in the political world, the social world, the intellectual world, the podcasting world, whatever, I mean, I lost, I won for a while, and then I lost hard.
Yeah.
And I lost like almost everything, right? I mean, as far as the sort of public platforms work goes. Sorry?
You lost all of your major platforms and the reach that you had.
Sure.
Arbitrary. Yeah,
income and all of that, right? And so the people who lied won against the people who tell the truth. And this is, you know, Socrates and Jesus and Galileo, and you sort of go through the list on and on and on. People don't have morals to fall back on. They don't say, well, you know, my friend here, the guy, you, have kind of established to me that this woman was lying. And so we don't want to have liars in the group, so we'll certainly talk to her about it. But if she's aggressive or manipulative, man, she's out. I mean, life doesn't work. I wish it did. I wish it did. It works like that in my world, but not in the world as a whole. In the world as a whole, your friend group, my friend group in the past, will absolutely side with the most aggressive and unstable person. And if you're reasonable and moral, you're toast. Because it's just about appeasing the bad guys. Because the bad guys will make their life difficult in a way that you won't. So if there's a woman who's willing to lie about you, everyone understands, oh, she'll be willing to lie about me too. And she might spread some really dangerous lies. So people are just doing a cost-benefit calculation and saying, well, you know, boy, she's willing to lie about this, about a guy she really claimed to love. I mean, I'm not that close to her. And if she's willing to lie about him, she's willing to lie about me. And if she's willing to lie about me, my life could get seriously complicated and difficult. So you're out and she's in.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it really changed my perspective on human nature. And I know that you've shared these truths about human nature over the last many years, but for just to feel it on an intimate perspective, it allowed me to see that like this woman who was like wanting me to propose to her to get married, you know, just a couple weeks earlier, went from that to like spreading the worst things she really could have said about me, you know, to the whole world. And it just, that.
Well, no, there could be a lot worse, brother.
Well,
you could get false allegations. You could get fired at work. She could go to the cops. I mean, there's a lot worse. Unless, I mean, if what I've heard is, you know, she said you broke up over text, which is not nice. But no, things can get a lot worse. And
that's so true.
Yeah, people just look and say, okay, who's going to make the most trouble for me, right? So I assume that the people, I can't read minds, but I assume people in the media and the people on the platforms said, okay, so Steph is a reasonable, non-vengeful, non-psycho guy. So what's he going to do? Make a PowerPoint proving that I'm wrong? That doesn't do me any harm, right? I mean, whereas these other people, if they don't get me to deplatform Steph, they're going to try and get me fired. Now, Steph's not going to try and get me fired. And again, I don't know. I mean, this is just my guess. I don't have any proof of it. This is just my guess about how things happen. That people aren't making decisions based on principle. Well, there's a right of free speech and, you know, he hasn't broken our standards and blah, 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 blah. What they're doing is they're saying, well, Steph isn't going to make my life difficult. These people who want him banned, they're going to make my life difficult. And I think it's the same thing that kind of happened with the Henry Novak situation last December, which I talked about a week ago, which is the police show up, you know, there's a Sikh and a British boy. I think it's a Pakistani Sikh, right? Now, the Pakistani can call the police racist and get the police in trouble. Can the British boy call the police racist and get the police in trouble?
No.
No. No, he no. So they're just doing what makes the most sense given the asymmetry of the damage that can be done. So if they don't side with the Pakistani fellow, then he can call them racist, he can lodge a complaint, they're going to be investigated, it's going to take 6 months, a year, it's going to be tough, and maybe the newspapers will pick up on it, and like, so he can make their life very difficult. Can the white guy do anything like that? Nope.
Even when he was stabbed multiple times, he was just bleeding out. They didn't believe him. And it just...
Right. Now, if he's bleeding out, he also can't make their life very difficult.
I just don't understand. I don't understand how even set with the level of programming that we receive, like on a daily basis, that would overcome just the logical reality that this man is stabbed, that he can't, he can't.
Well, operate. They said that the story that they say is that, the blood was filling up his chest cavity. It wasn't particularly evident. Then they couldn't tell and all of that. And, then they say, well, he couldn't have made it anyway, which I don't believe for a moment. I mean, if you've got a rupture in your heart vessels and so on, and then they wrench your hand out back, they wrench your hands behind you to handcuff you, that's going to tear things up. And, he died 3 minutes or 5 minutes after being handcuffed. So, again, the facts will come out. Well, I don't know if the facts will come out. Probably not. But they were making a decision based on a cost-benefit calculation, which is what most people do. Most people are just cost-benefit calculation NPCs. They don't have any access to principles or universals or morals or anything like that. They're just like, okay, who in this situation can make my life more difficult? And who in this situation will not make my life more difficult? I will just conform to it, appease with the guy or the woman who's going to make my life more difficult. I will appease them. Which is why threats work, which is why escalation works, which is why lying about you works. It worked. It worked. Right? Nobody confronted her. She wasn't kicked out. She got her story across. She attacked your reputation. Now, maybe some people didn't believe her and maybe sided with you, but it didn't cost her anything. She's still in the group. She's still running things. Or, if she left, it was of her own accord. I mean, this is what my mother taught me. She understood the world a whole lot better than I did. Because I'm like, well, geez, I'm surrounded by a bunch of Christians. There are all these morals and so on. So all that happened was, when I was a kid, is people said, okay, well, geez, Steph's mom's really aggressive and vengeful and violent and kind of crazy. So if she wants to make my life difficult, boy, she could really do it. I mean, look what she did to her ex-husband, who she loved and had two kids with, or claimed to, right? Well, claimed to love, not claimed to have two kids with. I think she did. But they looked at my mother and said, okay, this is an unstable, aggressive woman, so she could make my life more difficult. Little Steph, well, what's he going to do? He's 5, he's 6, he's 10, he's 12. He's not going to make my life more difficult. So they conformed with my mom because she was aggressive. That's why people are aggressive, because it works. And the reason it works is that people don't make decisions based upon morals or ethics. They just make decisions based upon a cost-benefit calculation. And if there's an aggressive person who's willing to lie and break rules, and then, yeah, you'll conform to them. Because if they come at you, everyone else will scatter. Did you see what I mean?
Oh, totally. Totally. And it's honestly the one that is more willing to, like, almost inflict damage on the other person without regard to themselves or their future, that wins in a situation like that. It's not about win-win or having reciprocal relationships at all. It's just like, I can bring more force to bear in this moment, and that makes me the winner.
Yeah, people unhampered by a conscience, I mean, they have much less to lose. They have no resistance. They can just do whatever they want. And also, the thing is too, like, if I were out there in the world acting in a false, lying, dishonorable manner, well, the people in my life who love me would have a big problem with me. Whereas if someone has no conscience and they just do whatever, then nobody loves them. Then they're not going to disappoint anyone because nobody loves them. Nobody respects them deep down. Nobody looks up to them. What does it cost them to be immoral? I mean, if I was out there doing terrible things in the world, my wife would not love me anymore. My child would not love me. My friends would not love me. My, you know, that's not right. And of course, my listeners would desert me, and I would hope that they would, right? So for me, if I go out and do bad things, it's hugely costly for me. If someone who's not loved, who's not moral, who has no conscience, what does it cost them to do bad things? They're not loved anyway, then, and they gain power, right? Power is what rushes into your life when you're not loved. And it drives out whatever capacity for love you might have. And so this is why, if you want to know how moral someone is, look at who loves them. And then you'll understand what it might cost them to be immoral. Sorry, you were going to say?
I was just saying, how is that? Can you restate what you said? When love leaves somebody's life, power is what rushes in?
Yeah, so when someone is loved, and love is our emotional response to virtue, if we're virtuous. So if somebody's loved, then they're loved for their virtues, which means if they're not virtuous, they will not be loved. They lose love. And when you have love, losing it is the worst thing, because love is the best thing, right? So if someone is loved for their virtues, then they pay a very high price for being immoral. But if somebody is immoral, then nobody can love them. And so what happens if you're not loved? You still want to have an effect in the world. You still want to, you go for dominance, because love is win-win. When you love someone and they love you back, you're both happier because of it. It's win-win. It's like the free market. But yeah. People without a conscience who are amoral or immoral or just dominance or status-based or hierarchy-based, just climb the hierarchy, it doesn't matter whose faces you step on, those people are not loved. So what do they get as the consolation prize for not being loved? Power! They get power. They get power. They get an effect in the world. They bully people, and they matter to people because people are scared of them. And instead of love, they get fear and conformity. And that's the sad consolation prize. And so, and the more you pursue dominance and aggression, the less you're loved. Therefore, the unhappier you are. Therefore, the more you have to fill up that unhappiness with dominance and aggression and subjugation of others. All right, you still with? Oh, I think we lost him. All right, not the end of the world. Well, listen, guys, thank you so much. Great conversation, great call. Really, really do appreciate it. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. It would be lovely. I mean, I know everyone's finances are hurting and the income is hurting a little too. So if it's been a while since you've donated, freedomain.com/donate, I would really appreciate it. Lots of love, my friends. We'll talk soon. Bye.